great to be here for what is a really important discussion with Meredith Whitaker. Meredith, you have been one of the most outspoken voices about the dangers of AI. 4 years ago, when you left Google over this issue, you wrote, "The use of AI for social control and oppression is already emerging. We have a short window to act before it's too late." That was 2019. Is it too late?
No, it's never too late. Nothing is inevitable, but that's an invitation, not a promise. We have to work. We have to organize. We have to take risks to push back against the centralized power and control that the AI narrative and the production of AI technologies have given a handful of large corporations based in the US and China.
So by doing what exactly?
Well, there are many, many options. I think you can dissent, as I did at Google. You can begin organizing, labor organizing, and community organizing to push back against the application of AI for social control and oppression. You can whistleblow. You can reveal how these systems are being used, what licenses are being created to apply these systems to various harmful contexts. And you can participate in local politics, because a lot of times where the rubber meets the road on AI is the application of AI technologies to things like allocating social services and benefits, determining government employment, surveillance on the streets and roads. So there are a lot of places that everyone here can find to push back against the application of these technologies for harm.
So there are a lot of panels at the Web Summit here about AI. And I have to say, from what I can read and have heard, most of them are boosterish, and the people who are boosting them say, yeah, but of course we do need regulation, and that's the answer. I want to ask you, New York Times had a story today about somebody you worked with at Google for many years, Jeffrey Hinton, who was dubbed the father of AI, and he's now quit Google, aligning himself with you, and he was quoted in the paper as saying, "It is hard to see how you can protect bad actors from using it for bad things." That suggests that whatever regulation people have in mind, there are still going to be bad actors out there using it for bad things.
Okay. Yeah. I think, you know, again, let's get material with what we're talking about. AI is not some dematerialized, you know, technology that exists in the ether. AI is the product of significantly concentrated resources that right now are in the hands of large companies. It requires massive amounts of computational infrastructure, so the power that you need to train the models, those are in the hands of Amazon, Microsoft, Google, a handful of others. But all these AI startups, you all know who you license your compute from. You don't run those servers and those infrastructures yourself. So already, concentrated power. This is a business model of big tech. What else does it require? It requires huge amounts of data. Another word for that data is surveillance in many cases. Who has that data? The large companies who built their business model in tech via surveillance advertising. So this is a highly concentrated market with a number of, you know, what we can say like parasitic startups on the side of it that license compute, license access to AI APIs, repackage those, sell them for different markets. But where we need to focus our attention is on the entities that create and control AI. There are only a handful of organizations in the world that have the resources required to create large-scale AI from start to finish. And those are big tech corporations. So if we're talking about regulation, I'm less interested about regulating it after it, you know, is offered as a consumer service by tech companies. I'm interested in regulating the resources that are required.
Okay, so but what is meaningful regulation from your view? point. Before, you were talking about the need to organize, the need to protest, the need to be whistleblowers. That's fine for calling attention to the problem. The question is the solution. What is meaningful regulation?
I reject your framing. Okay. I think actually the solution is often found more powerfully in organizing and in pushing back than it is in legislation that frequently takes a decade to even materialize in a form that will be passed and enforced. So I'll give you an example. So this morning I saw that the Writers Guild of America, which is a very powerful union of Hollywood writers, they're going on strike because their working conditions have been degraded significantly with the advent of streaming services and the pretext that now we are, you know, watching TV and movies online, so you all should get paid less, right? Very common argument. And one of the demands that they're going on strike over is that the writers, the workers themselves, want the power to determine whether AI is used at all in the process of creating, you know, the scripts and the material that they work on. And they want to determine if it is used, how it's used. So that is an extremely good example of regulation that is actually demanding more democratic control outside of the legislative process. And I think it's important to keep in mind that these companies, the large tech companies, at this point in history spend more than big oil and big tobacco combined on lobbying. So they can say we want regulation, but they have people in Congress every day trying to ensure that they write that regulation. So we need other levers that are demanding that whatever is written, that wherever AI is applied, it's actually beholden to the public will and to the desires and democratic impulses of the people who will be most likely to be harmed by it.
So what would be, and feel free, what would be an example of the kind of regulation that big tech, Google, Amazon, whoever, wants, but which you think would be dangerous?
Notice and consent. So, or we can look at the state of Washington if we're gonna get concrete about it. And the state of Washington had privacy regulation that Microsoft basically helped write. And it uses a lot of soaring rhetoric, a lot of pretty language, but ultimately what it says is that, you know, in order to use something like facial recognition, all you have to do is post a sign saying facial recognition in use. There's no meaningful way to reject being surveilled and classified by these systems. There's no meaningful way to say, you know, I don't want to have that in my school, in my community. The regulation simply says, we're going to tell you we're surveilling you, and then tough luck. There's nothing you can do about that. So it's easy to claim we want regulation as long as that regulation is doing nothing to check the sort of power and incentives of these companies. So we need to be specific about it.
Right. You mentioned facial recognition. Mark Zuckerberg of Meta testified before Congress some time ago and said more than 95% of hate speech we take down is done by AI.
That's nonsense.
Okay. Why?
It just is. AI doesn't, like, I don't,
you know. He's just making it up?
Well, there may be a way to justify that statement via, like, rhetorical loopholes going miles deep. Right? Like maybe AI is involved in flagging that content that then a human content moderator always, always, irreducibly has to check because these systems are not accurate to actually make determinations like that. And as we saw at the beginning of COVID, if anyone remembers this like couple week incident when the content moderators were all also working from home and didn't have access to the equipment they needed to do their work for Facebook, all of the Facebook properties were like overrun with nonsense because they were actually trying to do it with AI. And it showed very clearly that these systems are full of errors and false positives, that they will never understand the dynamic and shifting and nuanced nature of human communication and the many ways that people use language creatively, and that it always requires often hidden human labor to edit and check the work of AI. But I, you know, I don't know what he was trying to imply was that AI is capable of content moderation. What we know is it is not, and I will assert here, it never will be, because the way humans communicate is always going to change. It will always shift. There's a new term or a new joke or a new meme that is always going to confuse systems that are basically statistical predictive engines that predict the future based on the past and are never sensitive to these nuances. So this is, you know, I'm sure it was fine for Congress, but it's not accurate. And if we're serious about this, we need to just push back on nonsense like that.
Well, speaking of the predictive and perhaps in some cases inaccuracies of AI, I have an example here, which I'd like to ask you, because I went on ChatGPT the other day and asked, what should I ask Meredith Whitaker of Signal about AI? And first couple of questions were so prosaic, I'm not even gonna, you know, what inspired you to work in the field of AI and how did you get started, blah, blah, blah. And then ChatGPT said, I should ask, Signal recently published a report on the role of AI in content moderation. Can you tell us a bit more about the key findings from that report?
That's a lie.
Where is your, what did your report say?
There was no report.
No report at all.
This is bullshit. It's a bullshit engine. And this is, you know, I'm quoting Princeton scholar Arvind Narayanan, so I say that, so I'm allowed to use that language on stage. But it is, you know, what ChatGPT is it takes, you know, a huge amount of surveillance data, of data that is scraped from the darkest holes of the internet. It's Reddit, it's Wikipedia, it's message board comments, it's probably 4chan. Natasha Tiku at Washington Post actually did like a really brilliant exposition of what is in the data sets that train OpenAI, and it's some pretty, or train ChatGPT via Microsoft's OpenAI, and it's some pretty disturbing content. But it has all of that, and then based on having been trained on that, so having, you know, been fed that massive amounts of data and trained with huge amounts of computational power, it predicts what is likely to be the next word in the sentence. So it's a statistical predictive engine. And okay, that's a likely answer, but it's bullshit, which is really, really important. Why are we using a bullshit engine for anything serious? Like, for real, for real. Because, you know, it's not, when you asked me this morning, you didn't know that was untrue. And that could have been
I did not. I was madly Googling the to try to find this content moderation report.
So waste your
which
time.
Which I couldn't find.
Besmirches my name. You know, and it gets much more serious than that, because we are in an information ecosystem that is overrun by, you know, falsehoods, by half-truths, by misinformation. And we need, as a society, we need access to some form of shared reality if we're going to have healthy democratic deliberation that helps us govern and ensure the social benefit. Like, that shouldn't be controversial. And yet, we see these companies, Microsoft in particular, releasing a ChatGPT demo that behaves kind of like that uncle who shows up to holiday gatherings, has a few drinks, and then just talks confidently about shit he does not know about. And that's funny at the holidays, but that's not something we should be injecting into our information ecosystem, into our core infrastructures. We should not be championing this as something you add on to a search engine where people go to find information they don't already know and check facts. It's stunning to me that any of this is controversial, but given the margins that are set to be made on generative AI, I understand that a lot of people are provoked to delusion by the prospect of profits.
You are obviously passionate about privacy and surveillance issues. You're the president of Signal. As a reporter, I use Signal all the time. I love Signal for communicating with sources. On the other hand, law enforcement does have problems with encrypted apps such as yours. So I just want to get a sense from you. The FBI comes to you, hypothetically, and says, we've got information that white supremacists are planning another assault on the U.S. Capitol to kidnap American lawmakers. They are conducting their plotting on Signal. We need your help. You say what?
So how many people here know what Signal is? Great. For the rest of you, Signal is the world's most widely used, truly private messaging app. So we encrypt message contents, but we go beyond just encrypting what you say. We also encrypt information about your profile. We encrypt your contact list. We encrypt your group chat information, all of it. So we go above and beyond to ensure that the way that humans have communicated for millions of years, which is privately without state or corporate surveillance, can continue to be possible as more and more of our communications are moved into the digital realm.
But the question is, white supremacists using Signal to plan a plot on the Capitol.
Well, Mr. FBI, it sounds like you already have information.
But we don't have as much as we need to find the plotters, and we need your help.
Do you know how encryption works, Mr. FBI?
I have deputies who do, and they can talk to you about this.
I'm sure you do. You should go check with them, because if once you check with your deputies and get a full briefing, you will recognize that there's only two ways encryption works. It either works or it doesn't. And if it doesn't work, we live in a world eviscerated of privacy, where corporate and state surveillance monitor all of our intimate communications. They monitor our whistleblowing. They monitor our conversations with sensitive sources. And they do what they want with that information. So a world with totalizing surveillance is a world where power asymmetries are locked in stone. So we believe in the last 20 years, we have seen a metastasis of surveillance, the centralization of personal dossiers that were unimaginable to even the Stasi, to other significant surveillance authoritarian regimes. And that we need to preserve the ability to communicate privately in a world where that has been so eroded to the point where, so much of our lives are now being instrumented and weaponized by actors with power over us.
Well said on a public stage. Thank you, Meredith.
Thank you, Michael.